Coffee Time Wednesdays with the Prairie Farm Podcast.
Can't hit us with the jingle. Do-do-do-do-do.
Happy Nicholas-less Coffee Time Wednesday to all you listeners out there. That's right. We have no Nicholas today. Nicholas is gone. He left at lunchtime and conveniently forgot to do Coffee Time Wednesday. I think it's because he didn't have a topic. But that's okay. We got a new guy here holding down the fort with me this afternoon, Mr. David Bruns.
Yep, that's right.
David, welcome to the Prairie Farm Podcast, man.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Yeah. So David is our new, I guess you could say, mechanic around here. Carol has been the mechanic around here for a very long time, but we're getting busy enough here at Hoxie that he's needing to be in the field more often than he can be around the shop working on stuff. So we need to multiply our force. It's a good thing. It's a good thing that Hoxie is this busy. And you folks that listen to this podcast are a big reason for that, of course. So keep up the good work, and we'll get to keep giving good people like David work to do. So, David, I thought I'd let you start this one off, and you could talk a little bit about some of the things that you've been working on here in your very, very short time at Hoxie.
Sure. Yeah, this is my second day. And so yesterday, we started with a forklift that we have here. It was not doing too hot. Came in the morning and Carol's like, yep, I got a hot wire, set up to the fuel pump, but it runs terrible and it's like has no power. And, so we want to get that to run on ignition instead of a hot wire setup. So worked on that, got that done, and then after that I kind of had to troubleshoot for the running condition on it. It just seemed like it was running at like 20% power. We couldn't figure out what's going on.
Yeah. A thing has been busted down since I got here.
How long have you been here?
I'm almost 2 years.
Okay.
So it's
that's a bit.
Yeah, it's been I think I used it maybe one or two times.
Oh no.
Okay. And then it basically, we thought it was done for. We thought we were going to be shopping for a new forklift. But David got it running again.
Yeah, it came down to some dirty plugs, and I think one of the plugs on cylinder number 2 was just not tightened down all the way. I was feeling the plug boots while I was running, and the number 2 was like actually kicking back on my hand. I was like, whoa, hey, hold up. That's not tight. We need to put that down.
When a spark plug becomes a bullet.
Yeah. So did that, cleaned them all off with a wire brush and threw them in, and it was running really, really good. The choke still wasn't working. Carol said he wanted the choke to work as well. So I just had to adjust the choke cable a little bit. And then we put a new seat on it. That was the last thing I did.
That's a big upgrade, too. Yeah. That whole thing was pretty raggedy. But, it's an Aulis Chalmers forklift.
I'd never seen one before.
Me neither, until until I came here. But I thought it was cool that we had one. But it tells you how old that thing probably is, because Aulis Chalmers just in of itself has not been a brand, I guess you'd say, or a make for a very long time, like since the 60s, maybe 60s or 70s.
Yeah.
And then they started to consolidate with like Deutz and now Agco. They're technically a part of Agco today, but it's an old forklift. David got it done right off the bat, and then he peeled into our Kawasaki Mule, which if you go back on like some of the oldest Hoxie YouTube videos, I think you can see Nicholas cruising around in the Mule.
Oh, really?
on a few of those, and it had issues then that he referenced in those videos, and that has never ran since I've been here. But David Carol was suspicious it had a bad motor, and he was correct. The motor's fried on the mule, but we're hoping to remedy that situation soon. And of course, David's going to be a part of that. And then the latest project is we got a hoxie drill that we are going to need to have ready for customers that are going to be doing some plantings here soon.
Mm-hmm.
And normally you're taking this off my plate, although I've already had to like do some serious work on the thing today already with the tire being flat. Whenever I have to get down on the ground, this is not what I'm wanting right now. So, but of course I go to pull the drill in and it had a slow leak over the winter and the tire came off the rim. So Dave's going to try and salvage the tire for us. And of course we'll have to plug it and, get it going again, or just put a whole new tire on, but got some drill maintenance that we're going to do. And then I think it's just going to be an ongoing thing here, keeping Hoxie running essentially. So,
yeah. Yeah. We're going to be just kind of like trying to, I guess, dust the cobwebs off a little bit.
Yeah.
Just get everything reconditioned as much as we can. And, you know, as stuff comes through, I'll just try to fix stuff.
Yeah. So. Yeah. One of the things I like the most about working here at Hoxie is just how diverse my job is, and you're gonna get a big dose of that. You know, yesterday you're working the forklift is gas, right?
I think
because it has spark plugs.
But
the mule is a diesel.
Yeah,
so you're already blending a diesel mechanics with, I guess, what do you call it? Non-diesel mechanics, just standard mechanics or something?
I guess so. I don't know. That was my first time touching a diesel motor today, so.
Yeah, well, they're going to be able to do a lot more of that going forward. And one of the things I like about David is he's not afraid to dive in, and I think that's something that people need to be more willing to do. Nicholas said you had some experience. Was it in the Air Force where you were a mechanic? Or?
Yes, that's correct. So from 2012 to about 2016, I was a C-130 aircraft mechanic.
Wow.
In the Air Force.
That's cool.
Yeah. It was fun. It was a lot of like hydraulic fluid stuff, yeah, and like lubrication and like just remove and replace type items. Mm-hmm. 'Cause we had engine troops that would only work on engines. We had troops that did like, they would x-ray the plane.
Okay.
And its braces to make sure that all of the supports and the reinforcement was good, mm-hmm, because it's all just a bunch of sheet metal,
right?
And so it's actually pretty thin, but it all works together and it's very strong. But yeah, if you get a very small hairline, something going on, it can go really bad real quick.
Yeah, because you're going fast.
It's, yeah,
a lot of wind drag and everything.
Right. So my job was mainly doing like scheduled maintenance and stuff like that after so many fly hours.
Yeah. Was that like a nerve-wracking thing? Like thinking like,
how much time do you have?
Well, I mean, just I've always thought when I hear about guys going to the military, because my grandfather, he was it must have been at the very beginning when the Air Force became a thing, because before that it was like
the Army Air Corps.
The Army Air Corps. And I don't think he was in the Army Air Corps. I think he was in the Air Force. Yeah, I know he was, because I remember seeing his old uniform. And he actually was stationed in Japan for a couple years.
Oh, cool.
And while he was over there, my dad has all these old letters that he sent home to his mom while he was over there. And and I think he actually told me this story once too when I was a kid. But he was messing with batteries
Really?
I think he worked on B-52s was the main thing he was working on.
Oh, man.
And
that's cool.
I think he was moving batteries in and out.
Mm-hmm.
And he dumped a bunch of the acid on himself and he didn't realize it. And by the time he got done working that day, his shirt was like mostly gone. It was just like had all these big holes eaten in it from the acid just soaking in it all day.
That's not service connected at all.
But but anyways, when I thought about, okay, grandpa did this job, like that seems like it'd be a pretty stressful job, knowing that every day there's a guy climbing in this thing that I worked on. You know, like for instance, I drove my 82 Camaro home from the shop when I was in high school after getting the carb rebuild on it.
Okay.
And it was the carb was in such bad shape that the guy who, I think this was the year before he retired, he'd been doing it for over 30 years. He's like, I've only ever had to like throw in the towel on two carbs, and mine ended up being one of them.
Lucky
but
you.
Before he got to that point, he rebuilt it, tried to rebuild it, and it broke down on my way home. Right. That's low stakes. Like, sure. I can coast off to the side, get help. It's a pain in the neck, but it's probably not dangerous, right? Whereas something goes wrong in that airplane, and that guy's got to eject and parachute to the ground, and millions of government dollars go crashing into the earth. Was that like super stressful thinking about that all the time?
Yes and no. I mean, there's a lot of fail safes in the maintenance instruction that we have to follow. But a saying that we had was, you know, if it's there, usually it's been written in blood. We actually, while I was there at my duty station, we had a flight crew go down.
And
this C-130, they have like this like autopilot feature on them for low level flying. It's got basically like a sonar type technology where it bounces off of the topography below, and based on what gets kicked back, it'll make adjustments and fly low level. Well, that malfunctioned. And so we did end up losing some people over it, but that was really abnormal. That was not like that stuff doesn't happen.
Yeah.
And so, but a lot of what we do is, you know, hey, it's had this many hours. We need to do these A, B, C, D checks. And then we would find stuff, remove and replace it, or send another shop in to come look at it. And they would fix it because they're specialists. But then, you know, sometimes I get a call at 3 a.m. and they'd say, hey, this plane just landed and they need to be in the air yesterday. So get over here so we can get it back up in the air right now. And it's like, oh, okay. You know, so it was a lot of, especially with C-130 is used a lot for like transport, but then it's also used for like tip of the spear kind of stuff. So,
sure. Yeah. Yeah. So interesting and such an important job. And obviously your skills are paying off for you today, even as you get to continue working in mechanics. And it's probably kind of fun for you too, to be able to just work on so many different things like we were talking about. Oh my gosh.
Because like I think I have a major ADHD problem sometimes. And so stuff like this, it's like,
it's perfect for you.
It's great. And it's just more knowledge that comes to my plate every time. Even if like today with the mule, even though we couldn't really move forward with it like we had planned, I now know how to pull ahead on a diesel engine.
Yeah.
And like, you know, I didn't break any of the lines, like nothing. Yep. Like, it, you know, I learned how to do that and that was really cool. And I put it all back together, didn't have extra hardware.
That's always good.
So yeah, so it's just great. And there's a wealth of knowledge just laying around here for anybody that likes to turn wrenches.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. You know, when you said you were working on hydraulics in the Air Force, hydraulic systems, and maybe my cousin, he was in the Marines. I think he did 8 years in the Marines. And he used to say, like, there was a saying in the Marines that if you are going to get on a helicopter, always look for a hydraulic leak on the helicopter, because if it's not leaking, that means it's all out. And you shouldn't go on it. But I think that's kind of like a common thing, is they have the lowest quality equipment or something like that.
I mean, like the military, we have a lot of great equipment, and we have a lot of great technology. We are one of the best, if not the best country out there when it comes to military defense, but it's still to the lowest bidder, you know.
Sure. Yeah.
I think with like the M9 Beretta, it came down to, because it was between the M9 Beretta and the SIG 6 hour something, I think it was a P223 or something like that. Anyway, it came down to the cost of ammunition.
Yeah.
That's why the Beretta got it.
Yeah.
So it was like,
that's interesting.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
Yep. Yeah. So, but no, it's I would say we absolutely do have the greatest military in the world, and that's one of the reasons that we get to enjoy the freedoms that we have here, and it's folks like yourself who've served our country, who made that possible. So thanks for your service to our country, and thanks for helping us here at Hoxie.
Yeah, no problem.
So, David, feel free to chime in now, because we're going out of your wheelhouse a little bit. We're gonna start talking ag, and this is definitely a Nicholas. So, Nicholas, I hope you're listening to this. I know you're not going to be editing it because I'm recording it on my computer, so I'm going to be editing it today. But Nicholas is usually our money guy, and this is a money conversation. So a good friend of ours, recent guest, he's been on the podcast a couple times, Luke Fritsch. If you haven't listened to that, go back and listen. It was last Friday's episode. A lot of thought-provoking things in there, and things that kind of tell it how it is, and we need that in all aspects of life, but especially in agriculture, where I think there's a lot of false perceptions, a lot of delusions even, of what it is that agriculture is today. And Luke does a good job of pointing those out. But he sent me an article this week. It's from NPR, Illinois NPR. Yes, NPRIllinois.org. And the title of the article is, "New legislation could change Illinois." Now, this is where it's weird, because Illinois ends in an S, and you have to like give it possession here. So Illinois. I don't know. Most people say Illinois anyway, which is incorrect. The S is silent. It's kind of like Des Moines, you know,
right.
Des Moines.
Yeah, no, that's a no.
Wonder if mayonnaise, we should take the S off of that.
Mayonnaise.
So change Illinois's estate tax for family farm operations. And so basically what this is it's actually where the Farm Bureau, you will not hear me talk about the Farm Bureau in a favorable way many times. And if you want to know why, you can reach out to me and ask, and I'd be happy to have a conversation with you. But this is one way where they seem to be doing what is truly in favor of small farms. So they are lobbying, and they've gotten bipartisan support in the state of Illinois from State Senator Dave Kohler, who... State Senator Dave Kohler and State Representative Sharon Chung. I think it's bipartisan. Maybe not. I think it says later in the article that it is. But anyways, what they're trying to say is that when the children or the heir of a farm owner inherits that farm when their loved one passes away, right? There is an estate tax threshold on that land that if the land is valued above this at sale, so I guess if it sells more than X dollars, then, so it's not so much its valuation, but its actual sale price, then you have to pay, I think it's 20% estate tax on that inheritance. So, David, if I were to give you, so the old, well, first of all, let me give you some numbers here. I think the old, yeah, so the current exemption is $4 million or lower. So if your farm is worth, sells for $4 million or lower, then you do not have to pay that estate tax.
Okay.
If it's more than $4 million, you will. And that seems like a lot of money, but when you look at how land prices have exponentially increased in just my lifetime, and Nicholas, I'm not that old. I'm not even 35 yet. But you're talking, people were buying land for, you know, a couple thousand bucks an acre when I was a kid, to now there's land that sells for $20,000 an acre. Farmland here in Iowa, right?
Yep.
And so if we average that out, I'd say probably 15,000 is probably for reasonable, you know, tillable farmland in Iowa. $15,000 is a reasonable expectation. So when you look at it that way, this is where we really need Nicholas to do our math for us, but I'm just going to spitball around 250 to 300 acres, and you're at that $4 million amount. Of course, we're talking Illinois here, not Iowa, but Illinois is fairly similar. Might be a little less pricey in Illinois. 4.5?
Yep.
So, okay, yeah. So, you know, a 300-acre farm is going to put you over that threshold. And you know, and so then someone would be like, yeah, but if you got that much land, then you're wealthy, right? So no big deal. Just pay your 20% tax. But the problem is a lot of people aren't wealthy until they receive their inheritance, right? And so what ends up happening is all of a sudden David inherits 300 acres that went for 15 an acre, and he's over that threshold and he's got to pay taxes. Mm-hmm. And I imagine it's just 20% of the amount over the exemption would be my guess.
So it'd be 20% on 500,000, right, in this case.
Right. I think so. So I would expect that. I don't think they'd be like, oh, $4 million, you would have had to pay zero, but now you got to pay 20% of 4 million.
That's $100,000 almost. Right?
100. Yeah. Yeah. That sounds about right. Yeah. 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 So $100,000.
I don't have that.
Yeah. Yet. Right. And most people aren't going to just have $100,000 sitting in a savings account, you know? And so then you're faced with, you know, this problem of I owe the government $100,000. And what happens is people then just say, you know what, let's just sell the farm. Yeah. And then I'll have the cash to pay my taxes. And now the farm is no longer in the family
market.
Well, it's still going to be in the private market, but it's not going to be in that family's possession anymore. Like the line of family of the family owning that ground, which is a good thing. It's good when families can hang on to their land.
Yes.
Land is taken care of better when it's in the hands of someone who truly cares about it, right?
Yep.
I'm not saying everyone who buys land today doesn't care about it, but if there's a difference between viewing it as like something you're connected to and something that's an investment, you know, as our good friend Doug Duren says, nothing parties like a rental. And so even though it's going to have new ownership, it can kind of almost have that view of it's a rental, you know, it's not something that I'm connected to. It's just more acres for me to put corn on. Right. And so it's good for families to hold on to their farmland. Also, it gives future farmers an opportunity, right? Someone who grows up and wants to farm, but maybe they aren't able to farm yet, but they know that their family has a history of that and that someday they're going to own some land. Well, then they can have their chance to farm, which I think is an important thing as well. Our country is healthier when small farms are doing well. And so what this is a good, it's a good bill. So what they're proposing is that from that $4 million limitation, it goes to $6 million.
Okay.
So if, I mean, you're still not, you could still have the same problem that we just talked about, but it just means that it's going to happen to people, to families less often. It's still going to happen where people are going to have to come up with their estate tax money. And, but hopefully not as frequently. And I don't think that it's, I mean, reading the article, it sounded like, I'm pretty sure it talks about bipartisan support in here. Yeah. Yep. Right here. It says Rezin was, another state senator, a Republican state senator, said the bipartisan support was unusual and noted that to attend Wednesday's news conference, some of her colleagues actually drove 3 hours to get here. So people are interested in it. You know, politicians are interested in supporting this bill and this proposal, and good on the Farm Bureau. That might be the last time you hear me say those words for lobbying for this thing that really does help the small farmers out there. And so I don't know. I'm really encouraged by that. It'll be interesting to see. There are some other stipulations that go with that. Like, it's truly aimed at trying to help family farms, not just stay in the family, but have an owner operator situation. So there's like a stipulation that to get that exemption, you have to be farming that ground yourself for 10 years.
Wow.
So I don't think it's, I think if it's just somebody who's getting it as an investment property, like, oh, now I own 300 acres and I'm just going to go have a neighbor farm it all. You know, I'm going to rent it out, cash rent it. I don't know that you necessarily get the exemption, if I remember correctly from the article, yeah, I think it's a good step in the right direction, something that helps small farmers. So speaking of small farmers that could use some help, every time you buy seed from us, it helps our small farm here at Hoxie, which supports a lot of people now. We've brought David on. You heard in, I think it was our last coffee time, that Joy Van Weingarten has joined us as part of our marketing team. And, of course, the old mugs that you know sitting around here, like Nicholas and myself and Carol and Fred. Maybe you'll hear from Fred someday. That'd be interesting. Nicholas, line that up. But, no, it's a big deal to us when you guys order seed from Hoxie. You can go to hoxienativeseeds.com to do that. Or you can go over to theprairiefarm.com and you can see everything we have from CRP planting to habitat mixes for a hunting property or native food plot mixes. Those have been really hot here lately. Tons of those flying off of our shelves. So check that out if you think it's something you could use, or even just like a backyard pollinator patch. We've been selling a lot of those as well. And we just actually had a guy stop in today and ask about ordering one for his own yard. And he started talking about the power of, if every person had 500 square feet of prairie in their yard, how much of a help that would be for carbon sequestration and for pollinating species, habitat for them and food for them. And he's right. A small amount of effort across a large number of people can really create some serious change that we need to see from an environmental standpoint in our country. So if you want to get on board with that and go to those different locations. And of course, this podcast, the Coffee Time podcast, is sponsored by Wild Rivers Coffee Company. And I just finished off my last little bit of the Guatemalan roast this morning. So I will be ordering the signature blend, and then I will have tried everything Wild Rivers Coffee has to order. And depending on how I like the signature blend, I think I'm going to go circle back to the first that I tried, which was their dark roast. I just must be a dark roast kind of guy. Nice. But I'll probably go back to the dark roast, which is going to be partnered, or they're not, I don't know if partner is the right word. They're going to be sponsoring the American Prairie. It used to be known as American Prairie Reserve, but now they just call it American Prairie. At least 2% of the proceeds from that are going to, I think starting maybe this summer, are going to go to supporting American Prairie. And even if you buy it now, though, it's going to be going to at least some other conservation organization, because that is what Wild Rivers does. So go and check out Wild Rivers Coffee Company. You can find a link in the show notes. And we'll see you guys next week.
See ya.